From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, a special Thanksgiving episode.
Special
turkeys and legs.
Woo!
This is still what a Joey sounds like.
This is what an Aaron sounds like.
This is what a pilgrim professor and executive producer Jess Vander sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
What is a pilgrim professor?
I don't know. It sounded right at the time.
It's right.
I think it's still
appropriate
right.
Because this week we're talking about the awkward. More specifically, we're talking about awkward conversations when you go home for Thanksgiving. This week, what we did was we asked some of the team at our office to put a couple questions in a jar of conversations that they're dreading to have this Thanksgiving with their extended family.
Let's just rephrase. We asked people to write down slips of paper to put into a bowl.
A bowl. Sorry, not a jar.
A jar of conversation seems like a theoretical construct.
I like this.
Got it.
Jar of conversation.
If we're talking about glass vessels, I want to be specific.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You know, the other thing, it bothers me a little bit. Like every time I get together with my family once a year, it's sort of like, oh, I've got to catch you up on a year's worth of my life in one random question that you've asked. And it's like, A, how much ground do I cover? B, how much detail am I really going to let you have?
I mean, that's the thing. You just want to have a conversation with someone, right? Like your aunt or your uncle or whoever asks you that question, your cousin, they're just trying to like learn about you, or meanwhile they want to have a social interaction. They're just asking bad questions.
Yeah, and you know what this world deserves? As we here at Critical Nonsense have always said, better conversation starters.
Better conversation?
It's French.
Got it.
And ice skating related.
Okay, yeah. So let's get started. We have...
it's not Thanksgiving without a Michelle Kwan reference.
Amen
I always
to that. Say. Yes, yes.
So Jess, you're gonna unveil a question.
Yeah.
And we're gonna dig into how to do follow-up questions and how to make those conversations a little bit more interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Are you reaching into the jar or the bowl? Make sure you pull it out of the conversation bowl. The jar is a very different thing.
I mean, it is a theoretical construct to begin with. So, yeah.
So I have some of our questions here from our lovely friends at Sylvain Labs. And we actually have two of the same exact question written the exact same way. So we have to start with this one.
In different handwriting.
Yeah, two different people wrote, so when are you underlined getting married?
Oh, that is the one. That's the one.
This always comes up, yes. Right?
Well, ish.
Already married,
yeah,
which
well.
Is Margaret, why are you asking me a question you already know the answer to?
Yeah.
No, I think this is a perfect example of a question that always comes up, but is just not a good question.
No, it presumes so much, and especially from a cross-generational perspective, that gets a little bit weird, you know, just like the assumption that the clock is ticking. When is that happening? It's loaded with a lot of presumptions.
Yeah, my favorite part about this is that even my amazing 96-year-old grandmother asks me the same question and skips straight over, you know, the dating part, the boyfriend part. It's just like marriage and also everything else that follows.
It would be even better if it was, so are you seeing anyone? No, not right now. I just came out of that relationship. So when are you getting married?
Yes. Well, it's also the companion piece of when are you getting divorced is a nice one. Just like, when is this shit ending?
Does that happen at your Thanksgiving?
Not yet. Thankfully not yet.
We like Branch, but when are you getting divorced?
We just want to know. Yeah. We just want to be aware.
And when we say we like him, we mean not really.
Yeah. So my favorite, not that I, and
again. We love you, Branch.
We do. Not that I've ever been asked this question for many reasons, but that's a whole other podcast episode. That question of when are you getting married? There are a few different ways out of it, right? One, which is always my favorite, is just go head on and awkward. So just go with like, right now you didn't get, that's what this Thanksgiving is. Yeah. Like the priest is coming with the turkey. The turkey is the priest.
It's a pilgrim-themed wedding.
I have buckles on my shoes, on my hat, on everything that can have a buckle. And there was Swarovski crystals because he went to Jared.
I think like what people really want to know is just like, how's your relationship going?
Yes.
Have you been to Jared? Like, are you happy?
Yeah.
Have you guys been doing anything interesting this year? Did you go on vacation? Like, they want all of those other things. And it just comes to this weird pointed head of awkward of, are you getting married? Which, to your point, there's so much assumption baked into that question. For women, there's a lot of gender dynamics around, like, are you going to have kids, or when are you going to have kids? Or, I mean, I've heard it at my own Thanksgivings for sisters or extended family, where it's like, you know, your biological clock's ticking, which is just like an unfair, weird question to open with,
yeah.
Right? Like, you open a conversation and it's like, you know, what's your perspective on our existence in the long term regarding life after death? Like,
right.
That's not how you open a conversation at a coffee shop.
I mean, it's also super loaded with, like, especially when it's parents or grandparents that open up, it's like, how are you making all of my sacrifice worth it? Like,
yeah.
The loaded thing of, like, is my legacy continuing, and am I going to be around to watch it happen? Because this is your job. Like,
you think, like, yeah, I mean, I guess I wasn't even thinking about that, but the biological imperative is baked into it of, like, you know, I'm old.
Yes.
I'm dying soon. Yeah. And I put a lot of money in you SOBs.
Mm-hmm.
I want some ROI with some grandbaby pictures ASAP.
ASAP. And you need to be able to walk around and tell people, like, and whip open the wallet and show, like, these are me with the grandkids, all of them. I know all their names. I know their birthdays. I know when their school plays are. I know when their recitals are. Like, that thing is, and I've watched it with my parents becoming grandparents over the past 5 years or so. Like, they love it. It's become such a big part of their identity that I can understand where that desire to know, like, is that ball running yet, comes from.
There's something that I was talking about with Eliza, who's a strategist here too, about this same subject, which is that there's like a weird competitiveness, like, between grandmas, like, oh, but my grandchild is like walking already. So there's also, I think, that's why the emphasis on the when are you getting married kind of a thing. Like, it makes it not only competitive between families to, you know, to show off the legacy, but it's also internal too.
I saw this. So my wife's family went on, well, her parents went on vacation earlier this year, and they met another Shanghainese couple somewhere out on vacation, and they were from France, and they hit it off. They had the opportunity to be able to speak Shanghainese to each other somewhere where other people couldn't, and I think it formed a connection. But their conversation was entirely about just sort of the data list of sizing up their daughters next to each other in a non-awkward way. Somehow it seemed like they're like, my daughter makes this much money, she's married to this person. This, like, I mean, they were talking about, like, salaries, like, health-related things about these strangers that neither of them had met before, which maybe is actually a good conversation.
Yeah.
I have a question before we jump to the next one. What's a better question than when are you getting married to get at the same subject on the spot?
So on the spot, here's my thing. If I were asked that question, I would just translate the question into, how are you doing? Are you happy?
Yeah.
Like, how are you doing in your life? And I would basically completely, like, fuzz out that question and just respond with, I'm doing really, really well. Like, work is going well. I'm really, really happy. I've got a new hobby. Like, I'm generally speaking, like, in a good place. Now, granted, that assumes that one is in a good place, but then taking it as an opportunity to learn something about the question asker. So pivoting it around and saying, before they get a chance to ask the follow-up of, that's not what I mean, I want you to tell me all your secrets and your details, you just ask, how are you?
Yeah,
what are you into?
And also, if you do happen to be in a relationship with someone, you could also pivot the question to just talk about the happiness of you and your partner. Because that would satisfy, right? They want to know generally that is going well, or about a cool trip that you took recently. And you can sneakily make it sound like you answered the question without if you say, oh, but recently we went on a safari in South Africa.
Or you can do what we did right before we started recording this podcast, Jess, mm-hmm. and pull out that Pictionary set and do a drawing of the quadrants of how you evaluate potential partners.
That is true. That is true. A nice 4x2x2 helps every standard person.
That's content.
That's content. That is content. I will say, I think that it is also, depending on your relationship with that person, extremely fair to just say, that's a little bit uncomfortable. Can we not ask that anymore?
Yeah. Have you seen those Red Sox? That okay, one that one works easy question, in New England.
Question number two. It's actually not a question. It's just racist comments from grandpa.
Oh man.
I'm gonna sit back and just listen for a minute. I'm curious.
I mean, my approach to these things has quickly become just call people out on things, but not in like an aggressive manner, although I have taken a more aggressive approach in the past, depending on how far into Thanksgiving, how much turkey and bourbon and beer mm-hmm, is in the mm-hmm. system by the time a comment comes up. And I think this is also just sort of not just racist comments, but sort of things that are, you know, a slap in your values. Yeah. I'm going to kick your values
right in
square
the head.
In the mm-hmm. something.
I went for head. Did you hear me? I just want to make it really clear that I did not go genitalia.
Got it. I appreciate that. Well, actually I don't.
No.
There's something that is interesting about this though, where because it's family, because these are people you have to have conversations with and you have to spend time with, but that doesn't mean that you see eye to eye on the world. And it could be that you even live in very different parts of the country or the world. So it's no surprise that, you know, really contentious value-based points like this could come up. And it's, I guess I'm wondering, how do you actually connect with people and connect with these very disparate types of humans that are part mm-hmm. of your family without insulting them or getting into really horrible debates that aren't productive or fun? And dialogue is important, but yeah, I mean, what do you do with that?
I have an uncle who has very strong opinions that are quite polarized in the opposite direction to me. I don't think that I'm particularly polarized in one direction, although certainly leaning in one direction. But my uncle is very far in the other direction. And you know, we will have debates at Thanksgiving. But what more often than not, if he says something that sort of does kick me square in my values, is that I'll just tell him that as a person, I don't agree with that, right? That we're individuals, we're family. We still hug every time we see each other, even when we get in arguments and stuff like that. And just saying, like, I don't agree with that, and I don't stand for that. I'm not going to passively accept that idea in the sort of Thanksgiving ether and move on from it after that.
I think it's also really, there's one thing which is the soapbox moment in that, like, as an ally, you are required by law to stand up for those who are not in the room and can't defend themselves. And like Ellen Pompeo did this on Porter just yesterday. She was interviewed with a few different celebrities for their Women of the Year issue. And in the 30-minute interview that's online, she just sat up and she was like, there are not enough women of color in this room behind the camera. Like, you've got a fairly good mix right here, but this is a problem. And I just walked off a set yesterday because I told the director, I want this cast to look like the world I live in every day. Mm-hmm. I say all that because it is awkward as hell to do that. And it's also like this social contract or responsibility to do those things. And there are repercussions to them.
Right.
The other way to do it is, and although it's contrary to my nature, generally speaking, I also try to just call it out more so in a, I feel this way. So yeah, like your words have impacted me in the following ways. And you need to know that right now, 'cause I don't get enough times to tell you that, 'cause we only talk once a year. And damn the awkwardness, I don't care.
Well, yeah, I think the big problem that you've seen a lot in the past election cycle is the idea that we weren't talking about things. And I think it's okay to lean into those conversations where you disagree as long as you're having a healthy conversation. In fact, to be completely honest, I'm much more happy to have a contentious political conversation at Thanksgiving than to like just talk about the weather and when I'm going to get married. At least like passions and excitement come into the conversation and people have opinions. So, you know.
Yeah.
Jess does not agree.
Yeah.
You'd rather talk about the weather.
No, it's just that there has to be a third better option that leaves with everyone actually feeling thankful to be surrounded by their friends and family and not resenting the fact that they've come together for this, you know, for the purpose of being being together and enjoying each other's company.
I don't know that you have to. I mean, this is the dark interpretation that sort of is like, you don't need to have good conversations. You can just not go to holiday dinner. But it is kind of, there's a moment in adulthood where you start choosing to make your own holiday traditions.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's with kids. Like you start making sure that, you know, your kid is growing up at a time that they have their own holiday memories. And so you don't necessarily want to travel all the way to your brother's or something like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes those decisions aren't based on biology, like children. Sometimes they just have to be based on you being like, I'm done. I want to be thankful for the things that I'm thankful for. And that doesn't include you in this day.
This brings up something that I've been talking with some people about recently, which is comfort with conflict.
Mm.
And everyone has a very different level. I think cultures, too, have different levels of comfort with conflict. I'm from New England, New Hampshire, a little north of Boston.
Basically
the comfort, the comfort level with conflict there is like high. Like think of any Boston sports fan in any context. Like the cliche of Boston sports fan is like fighty and yelly, but everyone still sort of gets along. And so I think that culture's comfort with conflict is high. Whereas when you're thinking about a place like LA or somewhere, right, the comfort with conflict's a lot lower. And so choosing your conversation topics or based on your comfort level with conflict is probably something to consider.
Absolutely. Do we have time for one more?
Yes.
But really rapid fire. Are you ready?
Yeah, rapid fire us.
Okay.
Pew, pew.
Reach into that jar.
I think,
sorry, the bowl.
I think we should do this one, which just says ailments.
Has Sylvain Labs not learned how to ask a question? Like, what has happened to us? Ailments? I love this.
I love this too because so my family's there's a lot of nurses or medically oriented people. So ailments is just sort of a topic of conversation at like any point.
Actually,
right?
That's true for me.
This
too.
Is the funniest thing because there's always that one doctor in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, can I show you this side lesion?
Yep.
I need you to diagnose this for me. And it
that's
is
a fun,
so
that's a fun
funny.
Game tying back last week's topic, diagnose my lesion.
Unless you have an entire family of doctors, then it is so annoying because all they do is compete over the diagnosis.
What's
so
your
DDX? Like, no, it's this. No. It's got an irregular border. So, yeah, like it's not a
look at the stippling. Look at the stippling.
Yeah, it's really, really, really annoying. And then you get into these conversations about like why med students today can't learn things, which I think I brought into the podcast.
Yeah.
This is what the holidays has done to me, by the way. Thanks, Uncle Dave. You're the man.
Yeah, I actually kind of love the ailments conversation because for some reason, right, when what we're talking about a lot is like sort of a slow warming of your feet back into intimacy with people that you haven't spoken to in a while. And for some reason, like the warming of the feet completely disappears or the need to warm your feet completely disappears when it's about ailments.
It's the clumsy newborn deer of conversations.
Yeah, let
you're
me...
just like, broom,
yeah,
I got fibromyalgia again. Like, I, like, oh, we're here.
The diabetes.
Here. Yeah.
the shug. No, I think like, why is, you know, a conservative aunt or something like that, like uncomfortable talking about relationships, but she'll tell you in detail how her bowel movements have been going the past month.
It's true.
Like I find that hilarious. Why are ailments so comfortable?
There's the unification factor within the family of like, you've got bunions too?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. And I think that there's like a, you know what? We don't need those stinking doctors. We know each other. Let's find our Dr. Scholl solution and we'll be good.
This sounds like a very pro-ailments conversation.
I think I'm pro-ailments.
Yeah.
I think I am. Yeah. So the question, the answer, though, if the ailments question comes up in your holiday conversations, lean in, take them all, just go for it. Get out a notebook and like make the family medical history. So the next time you go for your physical, you're like, oh, I got it right here, doc.
Well, this is a really interesting point because no one else really cares about your ailments, but these people are like,
they're genetically related. Yeah. They've got skin in the game.
Yeah, my knee clicks when I turn left also.
And your great-grandfather's knee clicked every time. It's the 60 degrees left. That's the, ooh, it's the popper.
Also, he loved buckles. So the moral of this story is, to bring it all back, is ask better questions at Thanksgiving. And if that means doing research and planning for the conversations you want to be having at Thanksgiving with awkward relatives, do that.
Yeah.
Google is your friend. We have a list. Can you read Alexis's list of questions that her son asks her every day?
Yeah. A friend at Sylvan Labs, Alexis, wrote, any question that requires Googling, such as, 1, does Hulk Smash have a middle name? 2, who is a boy that has long hair? 3. 3. Why does Santa land on the roof? 4. What earth are we on?
I love this kid so much.
5. How does the ocean work? And 6. Why do our bones move a lot?
This kid.
Actual questions asked by Enzo.
What earth are we on?
What earth are we on?
He's the earth.
This is,
how do you answer that?
Google is your friend. Google your way through the holidays. We love you.
Thanksgiving.
Bye.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in beautiful New York, New York.
We'd like to thank on Thanksgiving executive producer and turducken maker, Jess Vander.
I was hoping it was just going to be turducken. Jess Vander.
Well, we'd also like to thank sound engineer and breadcrumbs on top of mac and cheese, Alex Contel.
We'd like to thank designer and from DC, not Prince George or Fairfax, Nora Mestrich.
And with production help from a number of people who are so much better than that green bean casserole bullshit, Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vong.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Creepy casserole might be the most important dish at Thanksgiving. Hot take.
Could not. Cold water on your hot take. That is not. That is a not take.
And we'd like to thank, as always, Alain Sylvain.
Thanks, eat a main turkey, bro.
This, now we want to do special thanks for Thanksgiving.
Please.
Just about some of the stuff we've been loving lately.
It's true. What you been loving? What you got a special thank?
I just want to thank Science YouTube because you're the gift that keeps on giving. Mm. When I'm eating my cereal every morning or my yogurt and I'm just learning about string theory and Oumuamua, I'm so happy.
Let's see. I want to thank Natalie Merchant for being so kind and generous. And for really thanking us so many times.
Do you think 10,000 Maniacs is included in that?
Yes.
Natalie Merchant or just...
Well, technically...
Forget the Maniacs. I'm only here for Natalie Merchant.
Just her, but because the night, you know, fine.
It was made for lovers.
Because the night belongs to her.
We just basically want to thank everybody. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Sylvain Labs.
Thank you for being a friend.
Thanks to Magicians.
Oh, okay, yeah. Actually, thank you to Netflix for really leaning into the magician thing this year. That has taken a lot of my time, and I'm looking forward to Death by Magic.
Thank you to Chris Angel for your fashion sense.
Oh, he really knew what a batwing looked like before anybody else did.
Basically, just eat some turkey, okay?
Gob, gob.
Oh, no, we're back. We forgot one.
It was really important.
Yeah, we have to thank Great British Bake Off.
So true. Paul Hollywood, those dreamy eyes, that handshake, you can do it all.
Underdone.
Very, very soggy bottom.
Thank you for just being so soothing with your harsh criticisms.
And your gingham just everywhere. The whole show, so much gingham.
So many accents.
Oh, the Welsh accent, the Scottish accent, the Irish accent. I know them all now.
The Liverpoolian accent.
Oh, the Liverpool. You got to have a Liverpudding.
Why do you call a Manchester accent Mancunian? It doesn't make any sense, but I love it.
No, and thank you. Thank you. Thank you.